Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we are off and running on the 30th of October. It's the Buckmaster Show. And Tom, we know the change of season. How do we know? Well, the tire pressure light comes on. I don't take credit for that. I saw that on Facebook, and it's so true. You know, we've had these such a drastic change.
No frost on your windshield in the early morning hours yet, though, huh?
I go away for a couple of weeks, and I come back, and it's
that's
like,
all it took?
Yes.
We're going to have to get you out of here earlier next season that we can get this fall weather underway.
So the fall weather will begin, and the morning low is, my goodness, I think it was like 40 degrees or something. Anyway, not quite yet turn the heater on, but might be getting close. It's the Buckmaster Show. We'll begin our 15th year, believe it or not. Coming up in January, we're coming to you from the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station 1030, KVOI, The Voice. We've got five radio stations, part of the Bustos Media Company, under one roof, and we have at KVOI and the Buckmaster Show live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we have all of our shows cataloged and ready for you. Going back to the first week of 2011, when we started our radio project, our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's get the ball rolling now with our contributor on health, Dr. Victoria Mazes, founding executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, where she is a professor of medicine and public health, internationally recognized as a leader in integrative medicine. Dr. Mazes is committed to helping individuals lead healthier lives and in pioneering change efforts that solve the American healthcare system challenges. Together with her team at the center, she created and implemented education programs that have trained thousands of physicians, nurses, and other healthcare professionals and impacted the care of millions of people. A highly sought-after speaker, Dr. Mazes is editor of the Oxford University textbook Integrative Women's Health and the author of Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. Dr. Victoria Mazes co-hosts with Dr. Andrew Weil the popular podcast Body of Wonder. She was named one of the world's 25 intelligent optimists by Ode Magazine. You can find her on her website, integrativemedicine.arizona.edu, and you can follow her on X at Dr. Mazes. Dr. Mazes, how are you?
I'm doing well, but I have to say my tires also needed air.
It doesn't matter if they've been in the garage, but after I read that on Facebook this morning, I was expecting when I started the car up to have the warning light on, but I'm sure it's in my future. But it wasn't.
Yeah, there were long lines to get air in your tires.
I bet. One thing there is no shortage of are pumpkins, of course, everywhere this fall. A lot of people enjoy pumpkin, of course, pumpkin pie and flavoring for the lattes. And it seems like the pumpkin they roll out the pumpkin at some of the coffee places in August. But anyway, pumpkin is pretty good for you, isn't it?
Well, I'm not going to say that the lattes or the pumpkin pies are especially good for you, but
no.
Pumpkin itself as a vegetable, pumpkin's a kind of squash, and it's actually native to the Americas. It was farmed by indigenous peoples, and it's really a wonderful source of vitamins, minerals, and fiber.
Mm. So preparing pumpkin, of course, we know pumpkin bread and all these other things that have pumpkin as kind of the main ingredient, but preparing it, you could certainly put it together like a squash as a side dish, couldn't you?
Absolutely, and pumpkin really is quite similar to other squashes like butternut squash and caboca squash, acorn squash. They're all really good for us. They all have that slightly sweet flavor. They have a lot of fiber. You can almost see it, you know, when you cook a squash, you can mm-hmm. see that stringiness or strands, and that's one sign that it's got fiber in it. The seeds of a pumpkin are really healthy. So if you're not eating it, but maybe carving it, you want to save those seeds. You could just put them on a baking pan and bake them. They're yummy. You could eat the outer shell as well as the inside seed. That gives you even more fiber. So there's a lot to be said for pumpkins.
Yeah, and I have some vegetarian friends who love to make pumpkin part of their diet. And I've noticed that in restaurants, you're seeing more and more vegetarian choices. Are you seeing the same thing?
I am, and I think it's terrific because one of the ways our society is moving forward is what we like to say plant-forward diets and plant-based diets. And here there's the recognition that many, many people don't want to become vegetarian or vegan. They do want to continue to eat some poultry or some meat, beef. They are willing, however, to emphasize a larger portion of plants on their plate. And so having more and varied options at restaurants is just terrific. And we have some trends in our country like Meatless Mondays, where maybe one day of the week you give up your beef or your poultry and favor a vegetarian dish. So, you know, pumpkin is filling. It has nice texture, as do the other squashes. It roasts and caramelizes and can really provide a rich flavor for soup. And pumpkin also actually is good for your health in a variety of ways. Many people know that the pumpkin and other squashes have what we call carotenoids in them. That's what gives it that bright yellow-orange color. That's good for your eyes. It contains beta-carotene, which is converted into vitamin A, which is critically important for your vision. So eating pumpkins or other squashes, good for your eyes. It's also good for your immune system. It's good for your skin. It helps reduce the risk of a variety of kinds of chronic diseases. And it's an antioxidant. Sometimes you hear about antioxidant vitamins, but there are antioxidant foods, and pumpkins and other squashes fit into that category.
When people are thinking of maybe not going all in on vegetarian, but perhaps limiting the amount of red meat, that's usually how I think a lot of people sort of transition into the world of the vegetarian and vegan.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one way to do it. And you can think of your plate, you know, divvied up, and maybe 2/3 of your plate could have vegetables and just 1/3 would have your protein on it. So that might be one way. Another way is the Meatless Mondays. Another way is really discovering vegetarian foods that you really enjoy. You could make a wonderful vegetable soup or vegetable stew. There's lots and lots of cookbooks, but nowadays you don't have to buy a cookbook because you can find recipes online. You can look up what would make a good substitute for, you know, fill in the meat. And so people are becoming more experimentative in their cooking again. And I think this is all a really good trend.
Yeah. And one thing I've been doing is when I do go to the market and say I want, I still like a fillet, a steak occasionally, mm-hmm. I will ask them for, believe it or not, 3 to 4 ounces. And I get some strange looks from the butchers sometimes because most people don't go that small. But I find just the taste and that particular, say, 4 ounces is enough for me, Dr. Mazes.
So I think that's another fabulous suggestion. I do something similar. I actually order frozen salmon to my house from a company that sells Alaska mm-hmm. wild salmon, and right. I get the 4 ounce portions. And yeah. Like you, I find that the 4 ounce is yummy and enough. I'm especially as someone who does like to have a salad or a vegetable or some other plant-based food as opposed to just eating the protein.
All right. When we come back with Dr. Victoria Mazes after the break, California has become the first state in the country to pass a law forbidding the use of the ingredients found in some very popular cereals, ice creams, drinks, candy, jellies and more. We'll talk to Dr. Mazes about that. But first, I want to talk a little bit about Mona's Danish Bakery, and Thanksgiving is coming up. And speaking of pumpkin, Steve and the team up at Mona's Danish Bakery will be certainly ready to take your orders very soon for Thanksgiving pies. And of course, pumpkin is one of the traditionals and one of the signature pies that they make up at Mona's. Mona's is home of the Danish Kringle. They are located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Website is monasdanishbakery.com. Open every day but Monday, and 6:30 in the morning they are ready to go. Sometimes there's even a line outside the door waiting for Steve to turn the key and get business going for another day. monasdanishbakery.com. More with the Buckmaster Show and Dr. Victoria Mazes right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The extraordinary beauty and craftsmanship of Mexican artisans is yours at Clay & Cloth in Barrio Viejo, featuring gorgeous clay pottery sourced from southern Mexico, including Oaxaca, Puebla, Merida, and Hidalgo. Also discover amazing textiles you won't find anywhere else in Tucson. Clay & Cloth also has an incredible selection of new Dia de los Muertos merchandise. See the selection on Instagram at Mad Max the Dog Shop and visit Clay & Cloth. Open Tuesday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 310 South Convent, just south of Cushing.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We'll continue our conversation now with Dr. Victoria Mazes, the founding executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona. Dr. Mazes, I see that California Governor Newsom has signed into law a bill that bans the use of red dye number 40 and five other chemicals from the use in food served at public schools. And red dye number 40 and some of these other chemicals have been around a long time, and they're in a lot of things, aren't they?
Yes, and for a long time also, there's been an awareness that some of these dyes can affect the mental health of children, and particularly they've been linked to ADHD or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. They just don't belong in our food supply. And by the way, these multinational companies who make these foods have been able to make the very same foods without them in Europe, which outlaws these dyes.
Mm. Why are they everywhere, these dyes?
Well, I think I don't actually know that I know all the reasons that they're included. I'm guessing that colorful foods, and that's what these dyes do, they make the food colorful. It's not that they make the flavor better. It's not that they make the food more nutritious. They simply make Fruit Loops colorful, for example. Mm. And so, you know, they get added. And there has been an awareness for a long time, certainly in integrative medicine. One of the things that we recommend when parents come in with their kids who have ADHD is we recommend an elimination diet. And in this kind of elimination, we say, well, let's remove things that might be triggers, things that are triggers for others. And that includes dyes. It includes common foods like gluten, which is a protein that's in wheat especially, but also in rye and spelt, barley, hops. It includes dairy and also some of the additives, things that are flavorants. So that's just what it sounds. They're put in to enhance the flavor, or their emulsifiers, which are put in to prolong the shelf life. And if these things only did good and did no harm, then nobody would be talking about them. But unfortunately, we do have substantial evidence that they can have adverse effect on our children.
And some of that evidence, Dr. Mazes, goes back as far as 70 years. The current regulations that are the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, that they have been looking at this, and a lot of that research is many decades old.
Yes. Now, you know, if you're listening to this and you're concerned, maybe you've noticed that when you eat processed food, you don't feel well, or you've noticed it's true for your kids. One strategy, because this law doesn't take effect until December of 2027, so it's 3 years out. Mm. But one strategy would be to choose USDA organic, because foods that have that certification are not allowed to put in artificial food dyes. So, for example, they could use beets to make something look red, and they could use turmeric to make something look yellowish or orange, but they are not allowed to use these artificial dyes.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned the USDA certified organic, some of the things that we can use to avoid the chemicals in food. What are some of the other strategies if we want to avoid these things?
Well, I do want to say that USDA organic really may be the best. It is because it has very strict rules, and it's not that easy to get that designation. That also is a little bit of what's challenging about it. If you're, say, a small farmer, you might not be able to afford to get that designation and to follow all of the rules that are required. But if it says USDA organic on it, it really means something. Natural, on the other hand, is a marketing term. And we like to think about natural, but it may not have much meaning. Another thing you may see on a label is GMO free. And that's good too. That means that there's no genetically modified organisms, but it also means that they're not spraying the herbicide called glyphosate on it. So I would say when you're being careful about your health, your kids' health, I would go for USDA organic where you can, GMO free. And then the other thing to do is shop at a farmer's market and talk to your local farmers, because some people who really can't afford to get that designation may be doing a wonderful job on their crops using little or no pesticides or other chemicals. And you could find that out by developing relationships with some of the people who are growing our food.
And these dyes, red dye number 40, yellow dyes numbers 5 and 6, blue dyes number 1 and 2, and green dye number 3. So the concern is that these dyes harm a child's ability to learn, and as they have been linked, I guess, to behavioral difficulties and decreased attention.
That's exactly right. And, you know, some people still have the thought that, you know, maybe not, you know, maybe they're okay. And our FDA still allows these dyes. But the fact that everybody doesn't react doesn't mean that some people may not be more sensitive. Children, of course, are smaller than adults, which is one reason that they're more sensitive. Another thing is that pound for pound, children eat more than adults, and their detoxification systems in their body, especially their liver enzymes, are not as effective. They're not as well developed as those in adults. So for a number of reasons, children are more sensitive to some of these chemicals than a fully mature adult would be.
All right. And again, that will take effect. And I didn't realize it's that far off, December 31st, 2027. But I believe it's a step in the right direction. Let's hope other states consider this. We'll see, right?
Well, the good news is that when California has created stricter regulations, and they've done this about a number of things. For example, they were the first state to mandate removing flame retardants from all of our furniture, which meant we were all inhaling these flame retardant or PFAS chemicals, and they had health hazards. Other states followed suit because California is such a big marketplace that most companies don't want to make a special product for California and then a different product for the other 49 or 48 mm-hmm. or 44 states that now have a new regulation. So often these do have a significant effect when these kind of new laws are put forward in California.
I want to talk a little bit before we let you go, Dr. Mazes, about the recommendation for the new COVID vaccine, which has been available since pretty much the first week of September. I think I might have been one of the first in line to get the updated. And it's not really a booster this time. This was a new vaccine targeting
That's right.
COVID-19. Let's talk a little bit about that and some of the recommendations that are going along with that vaccine.
Yeah, so the CDC did recommend that people who are 65 or older, or people who have either moderate or severe immunocompromised state, get two vaccines a year, not just one. They even said that people could get as many as three. You know, what we know about these vaccines is that they're helpful, but they wear off. They don't last, for example, for a full year. And since COVID-19 is a disease that is year-round, it is now recommended that you're in the higher risk category, which is over 65 or having some immunocompromise, that you are vaccinated at least every 6 months. The other good news is something you just pointed to. This is not a booster. This was actually a reformulated mRNA vaccine from Moderna or Pfizer, meaning it was reconfigured against the newer variants of COVID that are circulating now. So it's better than what you might have been boosted with 6 months ago or a year ago. But there's also a brand new vaccine on the market called Novavax. And Novavax is not an mRNA vaccine. Everyone will remember that it was really miraculous how quickly mm-hmm. this mRNA technology was able to create a vaccine against COVID back in late 2020. But this new vaccine, the Novavax, is not mRNA. Rather, it takes the the spike protein fragment made in a lab, made harmless, a purified form of the spike protein that's in the COVID virus. And it uses it to boost an immune response. This is how we've typically made vaccines over the years before we were newly able to make them using mRNA. So you have a very different set of choices now when you go and get vaccinated.
Where do you, so you can get this Novavax? I've heard a little bit about it. And that is that readily available?
Yes, it is available everywhere, just the way your or it should be available everywhere.
Yeah.
The way your Pfizer and Moderna updated vaccines are available. And I just want to say one other word to people listening. It will work better if you get vaccinated in the morning, and it will work better if you get vaccinated after a good night's sleep. So since we know it wears off, do your best to get a morning shot. And if you've like tossed and turned and you haven't slept, maybe reschedule it a day or two until you get a better night's sleep. Your immune system works better in both of those situations.
Wow. Very good tip. Dr. Victoria Mays, is always a pleasure. Founding executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona. Thank you very much, Dr. Mays. We'll look for your next visit.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. And you can find out more about Dr. Mays on her website, integrativemedicine.arizona.edu. And of course, she's very active on social media, on X at Dr. Mays. And also she has that very popular podcast with Dr. Andrew Weil. Midway Point of the Buckmaster Show, Midweek Edition. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midway point of our midweek edition of our program. The Green Things Zocalo Village folks, so good to us. In fact, so good that we gave them the naming rights to our show on the in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. 13-acre site, everything you can imagine for your garden, and some of their items at the Zocalo Village, the part of the business where they have the merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe, some beautiful pottery. I understand they have some pottery that they have just gotten in from Turkey. I mean, there's pottery from all over the world, places like Malta, Greece, Vietnam, you name it. I think they probably have the largest pottery selection in Arizona over at Green Things. Their website is greenthingsaz.com. They're open daily in their 53rd year of business. The sister business on site is called Zocalo Village. Their website, zocalovillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Next August, the city of Tucson celebrates the 250th anniversary of its European founding when Spain established a presidio in what is now downtown Tucson. Local history organizations have already started planning, among them the Tucson-based Arizona Historical Society, which, by the way, was established a long time ago, November 7th, 1864, by an act of the first territorial legislature. Joining me in studio, David Turpey is here. David is the Vice President of Publications and Communications. He holds a PhD in history from the University of Maine after teaching college-level history in Maine and editing the state history journal there. David moved to Kentucky, and he served as the editor of the State History Journal in Kentucky for the Kentucky Historical Society. And at the Arizona Historical Society, David oversees the Arizona Historical Society's publications and outreach team, serving as the editor of the Journal of Arizona History. And he coordinates new partnerships between the Arizona Historical Society publications and the University of Arizona Press for a book series on Arizona history. Dr. Turpey, David, we're glad to have you with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you brought one of your colleagues with us, and I'm glad you did. Janie Adams is here. Hey, Janie, how are you?
Hi, good morning.
Great to have you with us. Janie is the History Engagement Coordinator for the Arizona Historical Society. And Janie, you also work with David as the associate editor of the Journal of Arizona History. So you're part of the team.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot to unpack over the next two segments. First of all, let me ask you, David, the Arizona Historical Society, as I mentioned in the intro, has a very rich history in this state. As a state historical society, why is it not up at the Capitol? And I'm glad it's not. I'm glad it's here in Tucson. Why is it here in Tucson?
Yeah, that's a great question, and thank you for having us on. So it was the legislature passed to bill in 1864 to create a state historical society. That did not happen right away, and so it took a few years before a group of citizens in Tucson decided to get together and create a historical society. And so that it was really their initiative that set things off here in Tucson. And of course, Tucson used to be the capital of Arizona. I'm not sure if it was when the society was formed, But, you know, Phoenix.
Yeah, the original capital was Prescott.
Prescott.
Of the territory, then Tucson for a while, and then Phoenix.
Right, right. So, yeah, it was really private initiative getting the Historical Society started. In the 1890s, the state did sort of acknowledge the group in Tucson and say, yes, you are the Arizona Historical Society. But then it wasn't for another several decades in the 1970s that state funding actually started coming into the Arizona Historical Society.
Janie, tell us a little bit about the footprint of the Arizona Historical Society. What does your organization encompass?
Oh, my gosh. So the Arizona Historical Society has, of course, publications, which is very near and dear to David and I. So we produce quarterly the Journal of Arizona History.
And that's available to anyone for a small donation, right?
Yeah. So it's a perk of membership with the Arizona Historical Society. Okay. So when you become a member, and base individual membership starts at $50. Mm-hmm. But when you become a member of the Arizona Historical Society, we mail you quarterly a copy of the Journal of Arizona History, and you get free online access to Project Muse, which has our most current issues, and then JSTOR, which has the back catalog of the last, 65 years of Arizona history, journal history. So that's, I think, a big part, and very, like I said, very near to David and I is the journal. But beyond that, we have museums and historical sites.
How many museums?
So we.
I mean, I think of you guys over on Park Avenue. Yeah, that's your home museum.
Yeah.
Right?
So we currently have three museums: one in Tucson, one in Tempe, and one in Flagstaff.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Oh yeah, and then we have a host of historical sites around the state. So we've got a couple in Tucson, the O'Brown House and the Sosa Carrillo House, and then we've got the Douglas House in Douglas, Arizona, Strawberry Schoolhouse. Mm-hmm. I think that's the exhaustive list, is it not?
You have, speaking of exhaustive, you've got an exhaustive archive, right?
Oh, absolutely.
A collection that goes back a long way, right?
Yeah. We have, I would say, fabulous archival holdings in our reading rooms in Tucson and Tempe. Mm-hmm. And
is that available to the public?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. We just encourage folks to make an appointment before they drop in and see us, so our archivists can be prepared and pull the material that you're interested in. But anyone is welcome to come do research at our facility.
Some of our listeners may have noticed when they see the Arizona Historical Society, your logo, it's very distinctive. It has an X, and then it has three bars running through the X. David Turpie, what is that about?
That is the alchemist's symbol for copper. So obviously copper being a pretty important part of Arizona history.
One of the five C's.
One of the five C's. And actually, I learned this a couple years ago. That logo began as the publications logo for AHS. And then in the 1950s. And then I think people liked it so much, they said, let's make this the organization's logo. Mm-hmm. So yeah, very, very distinct logo.
And with current exhibitions going on, do you change that up, Janie, every couple of months, or how does that work?
Yeah, so exhibitions, we do have rotating exhibitions that come in and out. They're up for a little longer, usually about anywhere from 6 to 18 months, mm-hmm. depending on the exhibition and depending on the loan schedule mm-hmm. for different pieces that we may borrow for an exhibition. Actually, this weekend, we are closing an exhibition.
Is that one?
Yeah, so it's called Drinking Local, and it looks at the historic beer, wine, and whiskey distillation and brewing in Tucson and kind of its impact, really kind of looking at the late territorial period, so I would say from about 1870 until...
Well, that'd be interesting, because a lot of people would think about Tucson back in the day and a lot of saloons.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Yeah. So, and even during Prohibition, I'm sure there was some action too.
Yeah, can I tell you a funny history
yeah,
story
please,
about that?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
So, during the territorial period, the territorial government was kind of meeting out big territorial institutions.
Yeah.
And the story goes, and it might be apocryphal, but I think mm-hmm. it's the story that we like to tell ourselves, is the story goes that Tucsonans were initially very upset to have the University of Arizona. And the logic behind that was because professors don't drink. And so there wouldn't be any patrons for the many saloons in Tucson.
The saloon keepers didn't want the University of Arizona because the professors supposedly didn't drink. But we got the university and somebody else got the mental hospital.
Exactly.
When we come back with David and Janie, I want to talk a little bit more about the Journal of Arizona History. And the summer edition was very interesting. It was about Arizona zoos, and one of our great sponsors, the Reed Park Zoo, is covered in the Journal of Arizona History, and really a nice piece that about the Reed Park Zoo that I know our friend David Layton, who does the Street Smarts column, David, for the Arizona Daily Star, worked really hard on putting that piece together. And we'll talk some more about Arizona zoos when we come back. We'll take a break. It's the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition, talking Arizona history. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
In 2006, Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan and half-cent sales tax. They are both effective through June 30th, 2026. For the region to receive continued funding for another 20 years, the RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. What a perfect time of day over in Silver City, one of our great sponsors. Midday, wow, 56 degrees. I could go for that, but I could go for even any of these temperatures that I see up there, 70s coming up. So great weekend over in Silver City, only about a three-hour drive. The land of enchantment is especially enchanting during the autumn. And as I mentioned, not a bad drive at all over there. SouthwestNewMexico.org is the website. We send a lot of Buckmaster Show listeners over there, and everybody comes back and says the same thing. Had a great time. Lived in Tucson all my life. Never even realized that this neat place was so close by. So might want to put it on your radar. Check it out for an autumn trip to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Folks may want to take an autumn trip, and it's not as far, to the Arizona Historical Society. Close by, over on Park, by the university, David Turpie is here. Dr. Turpie, Vice President of Publications and Communications at the Arizona Historical Society. And Janie is with him, Janie Adams. And Janie is the Associate Editor of the Journal of Arizona History. And Janie's official title is History Engagement Coordinator. Before we talk about the journal, Janie, I was mentioning to you during the break, you have a very interesting facade. It's distinctive facade of the building itself. Where does that come from?
Yeah, so our beautiful rose window at the front of the museum is actually the original front facade of the first San Augustine Cathedral in Tucson.
Mm-hmm. And once folks get inside, the exhibits do rotate. So I'm just curious, where do you keep all of the archives and the extensive collection? Do you keep that off-site somewhere, or how does that work?
No, it's actually all stored on-site. So essentially, yeah. So essentially, when you come to the museum, the front lobby, I always tell folks, anywhere where you see the beautiful green tile that we have in our front lobby, that's the original Josias Jostler building.
Ooh.
Everything else was an extension that was added in the late 1970s.
Okay.
One, for more exhibit space, but two, for archival stacks. So we've got three floors of archival storage.
Mm-hmm.
And then the entire basement level of the museum is all of our climate-controlled, three-dimensional object storage.
Wow. I didn't realize there was the Jostler connection.
Or
I may have heard that somewhere in the past, but I didn't realize that.
Yeah, last project he worked on before he passed was actually the Arizona History Museum.
Okay, the Journal of Arizona History, you guys focused on Arizona zoos. Of course, we have the Reed Park Zoo, Phoenix Zoo, and David, before those facilities, great zoos, what did we have zoos in Arizona?
Yes, we did. So essentially there were, you know, over the years, there were a number of maybe eccentric is the right word. Eccentric individuals who sort of said, I'm interested in animals. I'm interested in exotic animals in some cases. And so they said, if they had the money, they said, I'm going to start a zoo. And so the first one that I could find came in Prescott around 1908, 1909. It was founded by a wealthy guy in Prescott who had been involved with railroads and some other businesses.
Exotic animal collector.
Animal collector. And so he created this zoo on his land, but he let people come to visit it.
Mm.
After a few years, he decided that the upkeep was just too difficult, and he tried to sell it to offer it to the city of Prescott. He tried to offer it to the state, and found no takers. Eventually, L.A., the city of Los Angeles, took over the animals, and they moved it to their Griffith Park Zoo.
Wow. Then our own Reed Park Zoo, and David Layton who writes the Street Smarts column for the Arizona Daily Star is featured with his piece, and there are some great old pictures too,
yes,
as well in there about the Reed Park Zoo. And I guess, that Gene Reed was the city of Tucson's parks director in the mid-60s, and that's kind of why it's called the Reed Park Zoo. Yeah.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, originally it was in Randolph Park and called the Randolph Park Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was Gene Reed's brainchild, along with his number two, a guy named Emery Hall. So people started donating some animals. Mm-hmm. They first got the idea to create sort of a petting zoo type atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And then people just sort of kept donating animals. Monkeys, I think, were the first donation. And then it just sort of exploded from there. The first big exotic animal they got was an elephant named Sabu in the mid-60s. And
it was kind of like, I didn't realize that it was the Reed Park Zoo really began as donated animals.
Right. Right. It was, yeah, very, very haphazard. Not a lot of planning. I mean, the joke is that the city council didn't even know what was going on. David Layton, in his article, questions that. He thinks that probably they did. But that was the joke for years, was that Gene Reed just sort of created this park and nobody in the city really knew what was going on.
Janie, how do you come up with these ideas for, there are four pieces, four kind of topics each year for the Journal of Arizona History, and there's quite a lot of planning, I'm sure, going into that.
Oh, yeah. I think we're planned out till 2028.
So what's your next one?
We print two different kinds of issues. So we print kind of a general issue, which is articles that we receive that aren't necessarily connected to each other by a theme.
Okay.
Sometimes, however, we do print themed issues, and we try to print one a year, sometimes two, because we can't help ourselves. But we call those special issues, and those tend to be themed. So the Arizona Zoos is a great example. We've done a special issue on the 1964 Goldwater election. We've done a special issue on kind of Arizona state of the field, all kinds of different things. And we've got some really exciting special issues planned in the future.
Yeah, going back to the zoo topic, how did the Phoenix Zoo come about, David? Did it predate the Reed Park Zoo?
Just barely, by a couple of years.
So they were kind of contemporaries, right?
Very much so, yeah. And by the way, Arizona was pretty far behind other major cities. I mean, the first zoos in the country were in the 1870s, 1880s.
It's very much a Victorian era kind of concept, right? That took off, yeah.
Right,
but,
yeah.
But, yeah, go ahead with that.
So the Phoenix Zoo, there had been a lot of interest in Phoenix for years to found a zoo. And so that had been going on for decades, people talking about when and where they should create a zoo. It was really the Maytag family of the dishwasher machine appliance. Yeah, thank you. It's really the Maytag family that really gave the final push and gave some of the funding to get it off the ground in the early 1960s. And so the article we have in this special issue talks about the Maytag family, but really focuses on one specific animal, the Arabian oryx, which the Phoenix Zoo helped to save in the 1960s. So the Arabian oryx were going extinct in the Arabian Peninsula, and some international conservationists were looking to save it, and they said, "Where can we take this?" And so another desert environment seemed like a great fit. And so these things are really sort of happening at the same time. The Phoenix Zoo is being founded, and these conservationists are looking to save the Arabian oryx, and they both kind of come together in the early 1960s.
That's why I do this show, to learn something every day, and I'm learning something right now by looking at a really nice picture, a handsome animal, the Arabian oryx. This picture in the Journal of Arizona History, interesting. I had no idea, and that animal is still part of their.
Absolutely,
maybe
it's like actually their logo.
It's the logo. Okay, yeah. So that's kind of their signature animal.
They're very proud of what they did. Yeah.
And they should be. That's good that they saved that particular animal. Okay, Janie and David, how can people find out more about becoming a member of the Arizona Historical Society?
Well, you can visit us online at azhs.org. And it's going to have all the information about the journal and membership, our museums, research if you're interested in doing research with us.
Do you have events for members? That like members only events?
Yeah, we do. Okay. We actually just had our annual member meeting. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So members have a say in what goes on, right?
For sure.
All right. Janie and David, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pleasure
thank you.
Talking about Arizona history. It's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show as we count down toward the next program. And we will be talking to you tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show. Kathleen Wynn is the next program. She's waiting in the wings as I exit stage left. Have a great afternoon. Or it could be stage right. See you later.